Welcome, everyone. We are here, we are now, and this is The Holistic Way with Dr. A. I'm Dr. Jean-Paul Amante, and I want to start by thanking the producer of the show, the guy with all the gear and the know-how, Michael. Thank you for being here today and for all your help in making this show possible.
Well, thank you very much. Welcome back, everyone. For those of you that are new here, I'll give you a quick background on Dr. Amante. He earned a degree in psychology and biology from Wake Forest University, and then he attended the Casey Riley School at Edgar Casey's ARE. He then went on to earn his doctorate at Palmer College of Chiropractic West. He currently practices in Virginia Beach, Virginia, and has been teaching and applying holistic health concepts for over two decades. In 2023, he started the Holistic Research Academy to help others through the education and application of holistic natural health and healing. You can find him at the website hhcare.org, on YouTube at Holistic Healthcare, and on social media as Dr. Jean-Paul Amante, DC, at Holistic Natural Care. And today, we're going to talk about all the hype and the research around fasting and dieting. So, Dr. A, what is the right way to fast?
Well, first I would say to take it nice and slow. I think the name itself is kind of odd, right? When you think of fasting, what you're really trying to do is slow down a lot of the metabolic processes. But at the same time, it's interesting because when you start to change what you eat, immediately you start to notice a difference in the mind and the thinking. So we're going to take a holistic approach, looking at the body, the mind, and the spirit, because there is a lot of information, not only about fasting for weight loss, but now the research looking at anti-aging, the aspects of longevity, and get a lot of questions about this. And so I really want to focus this episode on telling people, hey, not so fast, you know, take it nice and slow. So really, fasting is simply the art of not eating, right? People think about this to reduce calorie intake. Typically, this is for weight loss, but also too, fasting has now been associated with the process of detoxing and cleaning out the body. And as most people know, we could all use a good spring cleaning. Right? And the regular increase of cleaning the body through increasing the elimination channels and getting rid of all the old stuff is really important when it comes to maintaining a healthy body. And so fasting is not only just about food and not eating, but I would propose in this show that it's also avoiding and abstaining really from anything. Right? You could also, you know, fast from, you know, watching too much television, you know, fasting from too much time on your device, also fasting from negative people, bad thoughts, all these things that we can look around and avoid in order to have a healthy benefit or a healthy change. And so for a lot of individuals, I would recommend start nice and slow just by simply fasting from bad foods that have bad reactions into your body. Now, of course, most people are probably familiar with this, but if you're really getting into the nutritional journey for the first time, one of the best things you can do is simply keep a journal. And I encourage everyone, you know, as you journal on a daily basis, not only writing down the things that you eat, but also journaling how you feel. Listening to your body and seeing how it responds to not only certain foods, but also the emotional context in your time, you know, during when you eat the food is extremely important as well. In fact, just about every culture takes a moment to pause and say grace or maybe give a brief blessing to the food before they take it in their body. Because there's this very intrinsic connection of what we eat and what we think combined together that really makes us who we are and influences at the cellular level the functioning of all the tissues and organs of the body. And so whenever you fast, it's extremely important to not only focus on the physical aspects of food and the body, but also the part of the mind. In fact, I've tried a lot of different diets and a lot of different types of fasting over the years. And one of the first things I noticed is after going without food, the mind tends to kind of speed up, right? It becomes more active. The thoughts seem to move faster. And I think one universal, you know, part that most people would agree with is when we eat these really big, heavy meals, and especially ones that, you know, have a lot of starches, you know, carbohydrates and such, we tend to get kind of fatigued, right? You know, after, you know, maybe a really big meal, we oftentimes feel things slow down, the mind begins to relax, and oftentimes, you know, how we feel very tired. And so there's this direct connection between what we're eating directly with what we're thinking. And so as you're fasting, it's just as important to focus on the mind through meditation, through prayer, and just being ready for this increase in mental energy that often comes associated with this idea of fasting. And, you know, we see this through a lot of tribes that would practice these prolonged fasts. Because as, you know, we kind of evolved in cultures where maybe food was scarce, maybe the environment was very harsh, it actually gave you an advantage because you can actually have almost a hyper focus. If you've gone several days without eating or very, very little food, sometimes this really helps us to tune in and almost be hyper vigilant in things that are near and around us in our environment. And of course, this is an advantage if you have to hunt, right? And you have to get food in order for yourself, your family, and maybe even for your tribe to survive. And so it really does kind of activate this inner survival mechanism. And I think one thing that needs to be addressed here is that when you fast and you take away whatever your body's used to, you're creating a stress on the body. And like all stresses, you know, we learn how to adapt, we learn how to manage it, and certainly kind of getting through that wall to the other side is probably one of the first hurdles that most people will notice. But also too, you are putting a stress on the body. So if you're gonna jump into a fast and, you know, maybe you have background conditions, maybe there's a lot of stress going on, maybe your immune system is not quite at its best, not so fast. So take it easy, you know, step by step, do it gradually and incrementally, and usually this will have the best results. And so a lot of the current research now is highlighting a lot of the positive benefits of fasting, especially when it's supervised. You know, we see research that's now that come out of hospitals where people will do these 30-day water fasts on distilled purified water, and they see a lot of benefits, right? We've seen it reducing blood pressure. We've seen it reducing the amount of circulating fats and helping with cholesterol markers, and also a lot of the other metabolic markers creating positive changes. There's also positive change in, you know, mental resiliency. There's also positive changes that, you know, can be associated with weight loss and, you know, combating obesity and a lot of these metabolic disorders that are really kind of the most concerning thing in our modern age. Because the truth is this, you know, a lot of things I hear in the culture is kind of, you know, still worried about, are people getting enough protein? You know, commonly I hear, oh, I'm not getting enough protein. Well, let's just set the record straight, folks. You don't digest proteins. Let's one more time. You don't digest proteins, and that's a metabolic fact. You know, whatever you're eating, your body breaks it down, and what you actually digest and absorb are short chain amino acid sequences. You know, these dipeptides, because the first thing that happens, of course, when we eat our food is the stomach acid dissolves and breaks it all down into this kind of mush. Obviously, if you've ever vomited, you know what that looks like. So immediately your body breaks everything down into these short chain amino acid sequences. And when you absorb those into the body, it's the role of the DNA that codes for RNA. And your RNA assembles these chains of these single and short amino acid sequences, and it's your body that makes the proteins, right? Our cells are designed to manufacture proteins to rebuild and heal the body as this constant state of turnover is happening within the body. So remember, folks, your physical body is made of cells, and those cells are only 7 years old. 99.99% of your cells are 7 years old or less. And I think this is a fact that a lot of people forget, is that your physical body really is made of everything you've been eating and thinking for the last 7 years, you know, and that's a fact. There are exceptions, right? There are, you know, certain cells in the body, you know, 0.01% of them that don't turn over, change and replace themselves, but 99% of your cells do. And what you're rebuilding those cells and those tissues and organs is everything you've been eating over the past 7 years. And so I think when you take a look at the importance of diet, when you take a look at, you know, the things that you incorporate, you know, we really need to update our knowledge in the current time with what we understand about diet nutrition. And so you don't digest proteins. What you want to make sure, folks, is you get a complete amino acid sequence, right? There are things complete proteins, right, such as meat. But now we know plant-based diets, you can combine different things, you know, beans, legumes, rice, corn. You can even combine things like soy, almonds, you know, and rice in total to create complete proteins. And so as long as you're getting the full amino acid sequence, your body's going to manufacture those proteins in whatever you need. And so the most important thing is when you fast, you have to make sure that you gradually introduce things back into the system, because you're basically starving your body of the sugar, the nutrients, and the essential electrolytes that it needs. And so doing these prolonged water fasts, of course, your body can only go a few days without water. We now know the body can go, you know, many weeks without food. But when you reintroduce things, it's really important to have electrolytes in the body. I mean, think about, you know, for example, Gandhi, you know, and the role that he had, you know, brought down the British Empire and, you know, trying to heal his culture simply by fasting, not eating. But even Gandhi himself drank lemon water with trace amounts of electrolytes, and keeping the body hydrated keeps those essential functionings as needed. And so I definitely think with the modern research we have on fasting, it can be done safely, it can be done effectively, but it's got to be done gradually and slowly.
So let's talk about some of the barriers that might be preventing people from trying out this fasting. These are some things from my experience. When I've tried fasting, I very quickly, if I'm not eating, start to get headaches. And I've noticed this sort of energy boost that you talk about, but it's not a pleasant experience for me. I don't feel energized so much as I do sort of jittery. It's almost like a too much caffeine sort of feeling. And then, like I said, I get the headaches if I don't eat. So if other people are experiencing these things, how do you work through those? How do you get started fasting if you sort of have these reactions when you begin?
Yeah. And it's very common, especially when you first try this, because your body is going to adapt and expect, especially at certain times and certain intervals. So one of the healthy aspects of regular eating, consistent eating at certain times, is your body's going to adapt around that. So when you withdraw that food and it doesn't get that, one of the first typical causes of headache is that drop in blood sugar, right? And so when you have any change in your blood sugar levels, any change in electrolytes, hydration, if people are used to drinking coffee and there's any caffeine withdrawal, this can also influence it as well. And especially if it changes any of your sleep patterns. Also too, it's very common, any stress levels on the body can often cause headaches. And so with regards to common causes of these things, you know, between the nutrients, electrolytes, also, you know, muscle tension headaches and so forth can also be a typical cause of this. Now, there is a thing called the healing crisis. That is when your body starts to change over to, instead of absorbing things, to start to releasing things and processing things. Oftentimes, your tissues can actually begin to secrete and eliminate things. And if you don't have your natural organs of elimination up and functioning, you can reabsorb some of these things as well. So there's different causes for these headaches, but most common is going to be that fluctuation and change in typical nutrients, blood sugar, and electrolytes. And so what are the organs of elimination? Well, number one, the largest organ is your skin, right? And so doing anything that just helps to sweat it out. If you look at, for example, bathroom code number one and number two is keeping well hydrated. That's why water fasts are really important, because keeping the adequate amounts of hydration, which is typically for most people half of your body weight in ounces, right? So if you weigh 200 pounds, make sure you're drinking at least 100 ounces of good, clean, purified water per day. And this will naturally keep things flowing, releasing out of the body. Same thing, increasing bowel movements as well as breathing. And so the combination of breath work, increasing eliminations, not only through the skin, but also through the bowels, the bladder, can also be helpful to prevent some of these reabsorption, what things people will call a healing crisis. But that is one of the initial barriers, are those first uncomfortable feelings. And oftentimes it's noticed in the first 24 to 48 hours. So if it's your first time doing this and you start to get a lot of these things, headaches, fatigue, stress, just sit tight. Keep yourself well hydrated. Keep your activity relatively low, because obviously if you don't have active blood sugar in your system and you don't have electrolytes, what else are people going to notice? Fatigue, tiredness. And so especially if you lead a high stress lifestyle, when you fast, take time to slow down. Take either a couple days off from work. Don't exercise a whole lot. I mean, you can certainly do walking and so forth to keep kind of some regular movement. You know, as you said, it's good to sweat, but, you know, sweating can be done, you know, in your shower, in a steam cabinet, in a sauna, these types of things as you're turning over, the water in the body. But yeah, if you're a typical athlete, you know, fasting can be beneficial for athletic performance and recovery, but I definitely don't recommend it during a hard day of training. Again, if you decrease your blood sugar and you lower your nutrients and electrolytes coming in, you need to slow down. You need to take that time to rest. And oftentimes, after the first 48 hours, a lot of those headaches, they do go away. And so there's that initial reaction that the body has. And if you can make it through that, oftentimes it becomes a lot more manageable. The headaches will decrease, the energy picks up, and you'll notice that, you know, at first, it's the mind. It's almost kind of like the incessant thought of food. And to me, it's absolutely, you know, again, intrinsic that we look at the body-mind connection from the holistic point of view here, in that, you know, the mind is kind of always thinking about food. We have an emotional connection with food. You know, oftentimes, if you think about, you know, growing up in your, you know, family's kitchen and those familiar smells of kind of those, you know, dishes and different types of foods that bring back a lot of these memories, you know, there's a real emotional connection with food. So needless to say, when you deny that from the body, you're going to start to have an emotional experience. And so this is why a lot of traditional rituals will use fasting as a way to prepare the body for mental and emotional healing as well. And so a lot of ancient cultures all use fasting for spiritual reasons, right? And so not only in the preparation of the body through different types of ancient healing methods, but also, of course, when you look at different religious and spiritual traditions, you know, what's probably one of the most hallmarks of monks joining a monastery is fasting. And obviously it's not just the food, but it's also, you know, being able to control the mind. You know, when we think about the most basic way we can start to increase our mental resilience and become better at, you know, controlling our own thoughts and focusing on what we want is, more importantly, just controlling what you put into your body. And the degree to which a lot of individuals are so deeply ingrained in their habits, they can't even control what they put into their own bodies. And so the first thing we should fast from is foods and beverages that aren't very healthy for us, and making some positive changes, you know, from these foods into more healthier options. So any place, you know, anyone who wants to begin fasting, probably one of the best places is that, and making good, healthy substitutions, and start to just fast from the negative foods. And what are these? These are going to be ultra-processed foods. These are going to be, fried foods, bad combinations and so forth. And so a lot of the times, when you look at, for example, eating too much, the good 80% rule, which is you just want to eat till you're 80% full. And I think a lot of people in this culture could really benefit from abiding by that rule and not eating till, you're overly satisfied. And then eating at, strange hours of the night has also now been shown to link to increase in weight. And so typically you don't want to eat too late. And typically you don't want to eat every meal maximizing your caloric intake. And so with regards to any change in dietary habits, listen to your body. And most importantly, don't eat till you're overfull and just make some healthy substitutions. And you might find that helps you get started feeling better, and feeling healthier.
So we've been talking about sort of longer term fasting, multi-day fasting. I've also heard a lot about trying to limit your calorie intake to a shorter period during the day, like only eating between 6 a.m. and noon and having, a 14 to 18 hour period where you're not taking any food in. Has that had research to show that that's beneficial? Is that similar to multi-day fasting, or what are the differences there?
Yeah, thank you for a great question, because intermittent fasting, IF, is basically going on a shorter period of time, up to a half a day or even 1 to 2 days without eating. Kind of like playing hide and seek with your food, so to speak. And so when you think about the word breakfast, traditionally this would be when you would break your fast, as in the past, most people would stop eating right around sundown. And you see this connection with different spiritual and religious traditions, but most people would stop eating around sundown to allow the body to digest. And most would recognize that if you eat big, heavy meals before you go to sleep, you can have some crazy dreams and even nightmares. And so oftentimes we rest better, we have more clear dreams when we go to sleep on an empty stomach or not such a full stomach. And so the best way to start intermittent fasting is first thing in the morning. So when you wake up, my recommendation is right when you rise from sleep, that's when you want to hydrate the body. And so I typically drink about 1 to 2 liters of water soon after I wake up. Not only does it help to flush out the digestive system through the stomach, the like, and usually this is just room temperature water. I'm not a big fan of ice cold beverages for a variety of reasons. But just room temperature water, flush the body out. Typically, I love black coffee, like good organic coffee. So I'll have a little bit of coffee, and sometimes I'll go up until the afternoon without eating anything. And so that first meal of the day, whether it's in the morning, afternoon, or the midday, is when you technically break your fast, hence the word breakfast. And so there's a lot of individuals out there who recommend trying to eat one meal a day, or not eating until noon, or they eat in a small window. I mean, if you look out there's so many different philosophies, approaches, and techniques of this. And I can't say that I've tried them all, but I've tried a lot of them. And I have found what works for me. And what I'm encouraging all the listeners to do is find what works for you. Try these things out and try them a few times. As we said before, sometimes there's that initial period that you kind of have to get through, where there's the mind, maybe some physical reactions. But trust me, your body will adapt to whatever you consistently do. And so if you're trying intermittent fasting, start off with just half a day or maybe going a full day. See how your body responds, see how you feel, and then gradually increase up from there to where you're doing a multi-day fasting. And so when you really want to take the holistic approach, clearly identify why you're doing this, right? It's so important to have a spiritual intention behind everything that you do, connected to a higher purpose, and more importantly, connect the mind to it. And so use that time to also meditate, pray if you have a practice of doing so, and connecting the mind, the body, and the spirit all together will certainly make the experience much, much more meaningful.
I think a lot of people are interested in this idea of fasting from a weight loss perspective. Can you talk a little bit about how fasting can be beneficial for weight loss and what is this energy-based diet?
So the concept of an energy-based diet is looking at the amount of energy that the body burns per day and then aligning the dietary intake to that energetic need. And so it would be the same as if you were getting your car and first thing in the morning, you go to the gas station, right? And you fill up your tank, and that's most people when they wake up, eating a nice full breakfast. But when you look at the actual energy demands that people put on their metabolism, it's very, very low in the modern era. And obviously, the sedentary lifestyle at home and at work, it's a real thing. And so when you look at the actual amount of energy that you burn, most people just burn it, walking to their car and they sit and they drive to work or wherever they're going. And then it's a short little walk inside. And most people are usually sitting and sedentary. Maybe they have a standing desk at work, and the same thing, they get in the car and they drive home. So it's really the same as if you were to fill up your gas tank, drive a couple blocks just down the street, and then right at lunchtime, you go back to the gas station and you try to fill up another full tank of gas. And then again, drive a couple blocks, and then one more time at dinner time, you go and you try to tank the car again. Now, obviously, the difference with your car is you can't keep filling up the tank unless you burn the gas first. Well, your body works a little differently, right? Any gas that you don't use in this model gets converted to fat, right? It gets converted to glycogen. Your glycogen stores get added to your fat. And the truth is we have a certain number of fat cells, but they begin to expand, accommodating more of this fat. And so really the best way to look at fat, it's your reserve fuel. And so you have all this reserve gasoline in your gas tank that's ready there to be burned. And if you don't use it, you're just going to store it for a later period of time. Now, think about the simple example of if you were to drive across the country, right? If you were to wake up in New York City, hop in your car that morning, fill up your tank and immediately start driving to California or Texas or wherever it is you want to go. You're driving all day long. Now think about that. Once you're in your car, how long are you going to be able to drive? And let's say it's nonstop. How long are you going to be able to go for in your car? Well, typical gas burning cars, about 3 to 4 hours before you can fully empty out the tank. Now obviously you got to stop, refill up the tank, get back in the car, and you're driving all day again, burning up all that gasoline. And you would have to fill up your tank at least what, 3 to 4 times a day. And so the concept of the energy-based diet isn't starting with the food, it's starting with your energetic output. And you have to start increasing your metabolism either through movement, either through activities, through exercise. And this is why exercising a little bit in the morning and a little bit in the evening is really good to keep that energy base up. Or just look at how much energy you're burning. And if you're sedentary or maybe you're bedridden, I don't know, maybe you've got an injury, maybe you can't move as much as you'd like to, then you need to consume calories on how much energy you're burning per day. Because the extra calories, the extra energy is simply going to get stored as fat. This is why all of the best weight loss programs look at losing small amounts of weight over a long period of time. And probably one of the most harmful ones is this aspect of yo-yo dieting, trying to lose a lot of weight really quickly, which the research shows does not have positive long-term benefits. A lot of people who go on these quick, high amount of weight loss very quickly, they tend to gain it right back. And so the most effective way to do this is to gradually change your intake of food and calories associated with your energy and burning just a little bit more than you're consuming. And as you do this over time, your body's going to naturally begin to lose weight. And what's the safe amount? I would recommend for most people, look at trying to get to a half a pound to a pound a week. Right. And so if you're trying to lose like 15 pounds, very quickly, I do caution against that. There are certainly ways to do it, For years, I was a wrestler, middle school and high school, and certainly in the wrestling community, one of the biggest challenges is nutrition and, quote, making weight. And so, yes, the body can lose weight, fairly quickly. Is it the healthiest thing in the world? If it's done supervised, it can be. But if you're not a wrestler or you're not trying to make a weight cut, you want to do it gradually and very slowly, because here's how your metabolic activity works. Is it really adapts to over time whatever you do on a regular basis. And so if you're constantly putting food and constantly eating, it's called metabolic summer, is a term that's being used. And so it's summertime, right? Man, we've got plenty of food around, we've got plenty of nutrients, so we're going to store it, we're going to save it up, etc. Now, when you switch over to fasting, it's referred to as a metabolic winter. And so the process in the body is to now conserve fuel. It's to now utilize your reserves. You start switching over to burning sugars and the typical carbohydrates that are circulating the system to using more ketones. So this is why a lot of ketone diets and the ketone acidosis that can occur, this process of ketosis from prolonged fasting that we can measure, does have some benefits, right? But over time, it can be detrimental to the body, because one of the most common things that you pointed out earlier is headaches, fasting, and you can actually begin to lose lean muscle mass if you don't have the right nutrients in the body. And so the most important thing is to listen to your body, not so fast, take it nice and easy. And when you start to kind of feel that switch over and that conversion in your metabolism, to just gradually expand that over time. And so first, like we said, just start off with half a day, then maybe do 1 to 2 days, then 3 days, and gradually increase from there up to a complete 30-day fast. And so again, I've had a lot of experience with this. I tried the Master Cleanser for a time, which is simply using clean, purified water with fresh squeezed organic lemons, grade B maple syrup with a pinch of cayenne pepper. And certainly refer to the book, The Master Cleanser, on why they use these things, but they do up to about 30 days on it. I've tried, carb-free diets. I've tried, the different types of ketones. I've tried the paleo. I've done all raw for a while. I tried the vegan, vegetarian-only version, plant-based version, and I've definitely found what works for me. And so, again, you want to find what works for you folks and then customize it to your individual makeup. There's the blood type diet. There's the alkaline diet, which 80% of your foods should be alkaline forming and 20% should be acid forming. And so you can do a variety of these different things. And as you pointed out, I went to the Casey Riley School and studied very heavily the Edgar Casey readings. And even there, recommending dietary changes. And probably one of the most popular ones is the 3-day raw apple diet. Of course, you want to do this when apples are in season, but he would recommend 3 days of raw apples and then a dose of olive oil at the end of the third day, about a tablespoon of good raw olive oil. And he says you will cleanse all toxic forces from any system. And of course, when we look at apples, they have the essential nutrients and electrolytes, but they're packed full of what? Soluble fiber. More specifically, they're packed full of inulin, which is a great source of not only soluble fiber, but they can help literally clear things out. And so my personal approach to this has been using smoothies, juicing, and teas. So when I typically do fasting from solid foods, I did juice fasts for a while. However, folks, recent research has shown that when you extract the fiber from fruits and vegetables and you just do juice fasting alone, it can increase harmful bacteria, harmful viruses, not only in the saliva, but also in the gut bacteria. So it's really important now to keep good sources of fiber. So you can certainly do juice fasts. I've done them myself with really good positive results. But it really is important to also eat things that are good, high in fiber, whether it's fruits, vegetables, whole grains, nuts and seeds, and those kind of things. And so, you know, what I would typically recommend, you know, when you first get started, I love doing smoothies, and I have a multivitamin powder that I use personally that has all the, you know, essential amino acids, all the different nutrients, minerals, and vitamins, and just doing that. And not so much solid food for maybe a day or two, but between smoothies, getting all those essential nutrients in, as well as doing juicing, and then of course tea, using herbal teas, things like ginger, good raw honey, lemon, and the combination with these different herbs that certainly can be a benefit. You know, anything like green tea, a lot of positive research on the benefits of green tea. Obviously, caffeine, as I mentioned, I do love black coffee, can help keep the appetite suppressed, which can certainly help when you're trying to go through a fast. But first importantly, set your intention. Why are you doing the fast? You know, have a definite goal, gradually increase it, and then listen to your body and maybe do some journaling and write down your experience.
I want to go back to this thing you said about the metabolic summer and metabolic winter. Because that makes me think, how often should you be doing these fasts? And is there a time of year even that would be more beneficial? I feel like my body sort of naturally slows down and hibernates a little bit in the colder months, and I naturally speed up and am more active in the summer months. Are there times of the year where it's more beneficial to do this? And then how frequently is it healthy to do this?
Well, it has to be based on the individual. And what I've also found, you know, and if we look according to the energy-based diet approach, we would tend to want to fast during the wintertime. Now, typically, this is when resources would be scarce. You know, if you think about our modern era where any time of the day, you know, we can go to supermarkets here in these developed countries and get literally any type of food from any corner of the globe. That was not the way, certainly in the past, where a lot of it was connected to what was available locally around the time. Now, to answer the question on when is the best time to fast and how often should we do this, I would recommend at least once every few months during the change of seasons, when the body is naturally going to be changing the rhythms with the change in temperature and around. Generally for maintenance, I recommend once a month. I personally like to do at least a clean out every month where I'll set aside about 3 to 5 days. And, you know, I just take time for myself, fasting to clean out, getting good bodywork sessions, doing things like steam, saunas, and sweats as to just clean out the body in general. For me, really works once a month. For most people, I would say at least every season, so about 4 times a year. And when you really think about the current culture, I mean, it really kind of starts this whole bad eating process right around the fall. I mean, gosh, think about just the American culture when we get to Halloween and then we have all these candy and all these sweets and so forth that we just, you know, pass out. And then from there, as it gets colder, right, we slow down. We're not as active. We're indoors more. And so if we're burning less energy, we should obviously be eating less calories and eating more lighter calories, healthier ones from fruits, veggies, and the like. But what we see is kind of almost the opposite. You know, then from Halloween, we get into, you know, the fall season towards Thanksgiving, which is a holiday specifically about just eating, eating as a variety of foods that often don't combine well with each other. And then from there, of course, we get into Christmas where it's a lot of meats and sweets and processed foods and treats and just, and then we wonder why there's this increase, you know, and, you know, people catching colds and getting mucus and congestion and so forth. You know, the mucus production in the body, number one, is directly related to the foods that you're eating and the combination of foods. It's directly related to your hydration, but it's also related to the weather. I mean, you think about what is the benefits of your body producing mucus? Well, it's to help insulate, right? Insulates the airways and the tracts. We also secrete mucus in order to bind up little bugs, right? So this is why we get a runny nose and congested when we're fighting things off, because as your immune cells bind up and fight off these, you know, these foreign bugs, the results is creating a lot of neutrophils, the tumor necrosis factor, all these things that are secreted kind of binds up and creates that kind of crud, you know, that we're usually hacking up and trying to get rid of. And so the combination between the cold air, the combination of foods, maybe, you know, decrease in hydration, you know, eating more sugary beverages and so forth. And man, you can really look at the connection of sugar and processed sugars in producing more mucus and obviously, you know, negative health benefits. And so right there's something great to start to fast from. Before you start eating less, folks, just read your labels and just start off with cutting out anything with a lot of the processed sugars. And in fact, cut it all out. You know, anything with high fructose corn syrup, anything with acesulfame K, you know, sucralose, and a lot of these processed sugars, your body does not respond to them the same. And so one of the common things that we see with fasting is its influence on the glycemic production in the body. Now, it can be very positive for most people, but if you have type 1 or type 2 diabetes, research actually shows that fasting does not have the same impact on the glycemic output of the body and insulin levels. And so simple thing anyone can do right now is just go online and print out the glycemic index. And you'll see that common fruits and vegetables actually are very low in their glycemic output. One of the highest things in terms of blood sugar are the processed refined white products, white flours, white bagels, white breads, white rice, all these things, even white potatoes will spike your blood sugar much more than an apple or an orange will. And so, again, just making some simple substitutions can create some really positive benefits. And so overall, the best time to fast is really any time that you feel that you need to. You can do it during the change of the seasons. A really good time to fast is certainly during the holidays and the wintry months when we naturally are going to slow down anyways. And let's go right into it. You know, there's a real social context with fasting. You know, to anyone who's ever gone through this, you kind of got to be careful who you talk about, because there's some real quick judgment and criticism that can come with it. And again, this is evidence of how emotionally connected we are to food. And oftentimes, if we're trying to do something healthy for ourselves, you know, and then we have to go out to a social functioning, or you're going over to somebody's house and you're not eating, immediately a lot of people will take it as an insult. You know, well, why aren't you eating? Well, I'm fasting, you're doing this and that. And then I have personally found that people almost have to defend themselves and what they're doing. They've got to, well, I only do this at certain times. And they start quickly making exceptions, right? You know, well, I only eat this if I deserve it. You know, I had a good day today. I'm going to treat myself to food. Well, hold on. Take a step back and think about that. Think about the rewards that we naturally give ourselves, because eating is associated with a sensory pleasure. And for parents out there, we have to be mindful, myself included, of how we reward kids for good behavior. You know, and oftentimes, you know, oh, you were great at school, or if you listen, I'll go get you that cookie. And so immediately we begin to train from an early age of the association with sugary things as positive rewards for good behavior. And so hence why in adults, you know, like, oh man, I did really well today. I'm so proud of myself. Let me go out and eat something non-nutritious that's going to usually increase my weight and do it. And it's a sensory pleasurable thing, you know.
It's not just the reward incentive behavior. At least in my life, there's been guilt associated with not finishing food.
Oh, sure.
So it's taken me, you know, a lot of my adult life to break away from that. If I don't finish what's in front of me, you know, I've done something wrong, right? I've wasted food. So if it's in front of me, I have to finish it. And I spent a long time overeating because of that.
Right.
And that was drilled into me from, you know, very, very young age that it's rude to not finish what's in front of you or you're wasting your food.
Right. And isn't that hilarious? What's your reward if you stuff everything from your plate into your mouth? Dessert, right. More food, more sugar to put on top of it. And so really just, again, just practicing listening to the body. Just stop when you're 80% full, because even then your body's going to still keep absorbing nutrients. Mm-hmm. And so it really is kind of backwards in that sense. And so,
but this is a good thing to think about, is the social aspect of it. You need to do your fast when it's going to work for you to do it, not just from your own personal standpoint, but from, you know, your social life too.
Yes. And the social aspect is having a good support network. Mm-hmm. So if you're going to do fasting for health, for weight loss, for whatever it is, you need to have a support network of other like-minded individuals. I mean, think about weight loss, Weight Watchers, for example. They do regular meetings, so they get together, so you have that inherent social network and social support. And so it can be very difficult, especially if you're living in a household with two different diets. You know, if you and your partner eat completely differently and one person wants to go on a fast and the other one doesn't, it can make it even more challenging. But like you pointed out, you know, very eloquently, we also need to fast from these past emotional memory. And this is where we get into the holistic part of things, that we have to rewrite our own programming on how we feel about food and how we use food as a reward. And not only that, but guilty. You know, boy, you brought up a great point, which is a lot of the guilt and the negative emotion that is associated with food. Because again, when you look at an energetic level, an energy-based diet, it's not just the energy, the food that you're eating, but the energy of how you're feeling when you consume and absorb that food into your body. So I recommend to everyone, even if you're eating something that you don't think is healthy, don't feel guilty about it. Enjoy the chocolate, enjoy these things. And as you eat it, enjoy it and give yourself that sense of peace, that sense of reward, and just, you know, just a simple, like we said before, 80% of the time, eat things that you know you should. 20% of the time, eat things that, you know, maybe not so much, that would create the acidic reaction, especially from a perspective of an alkaline diet. 20% of the foods can be acid forming, and that can work out perfectly fine. In my own experience, same thing. You know, when I was growing up, you know, it was almost an insult to your parents or the chef not to eat everything that was on your plate. And, you know, I really began to find that, you know, especially when you start hitting adolescence and so forth, that just, it was almost like encourage and eat as much as you can and just consume it. We would go to the all-you-can-eat buffets and spending many, many hours like trying to go for plateful and plateful of food. And then I started noticing the difference once, you know, graduated high school into the college eras. And what's one of the most, talked about college phenomenon is the freshman 15. Well, why does that happen? Well, because we start moving less, right? And the natural weight that's gained is because most college campuses, you know, depending obviously on your meal plan, you have access to all this food. And granted, you might be walking up and down dorm stairs and so forth, but people start moving less. And you find that from that early age all the way through. Well, as I started to gain weight early on, I kind of realized the change in habits and patterns. And so I got back into my regular running routine, got back into a training routine, and I've never looked back. And I often have questions from folks asking, like, what do I do? Because if you've ever seen me eat meals, I consume a lot of calories, but I've always maintained a very trim weight. And the simple reason is because of an energy metabolic based diet. You know, I look at how much energy I'm burning, how much training I'm doing. Currently getting ramping up for my fourth swing at the marathon. Even when I was training for the Ironman distance, I mean, goodness, I was eating a lot of calories and foods. And so when any time my training would change, I would adjust my eating accordingly so that I'm only taking in as much food as I need of calories that I'm burning. So if you have a change in your lifestyle, you need to adjust the intake of your diet accordingly as well.
Do you find that transition hard to make from a training phase where you're taking in a lot of calories, and then if you have sort of a lull in the training, or you're not, you know, your energy needs are not as high, do you find that your body still wants to be eating like it was training? Is there a lag there, or is it pretty easy to adjust to the...
Well, it's easy now to adjust, but it wasn't before, because the body is habitual. You know, yes, at first, like when I wasn't training as much, the same cravings were still there, right? The same demands were still there. And, you know, I certainly find that I could eat as much, but, you know, it definitely takes that changeover and that kind of temperance of it. But now, yeah, it's much, much easier for me, just because that's the way I've adapted my body over these years. And so one of the main benefits about, and especially with regards to the health benefits of the body, is this concept of autophagy. Now, what is autophagy? It's essentially your body cleaning itself out by removing dead cells and foreign debris from the body. The word autophagy literally means auto, self. Phagy means to eat. So it literally means to eat self. And what we've now identified in the research is when we go through fasting phases, the body's autophagy will increase because it needs food. It needs sugar, it needs these calories and so forth. So it will literally go through and start to eat up itself. And the first things that go are all these kind of what we call senescent cells, or the term is zombie cells, and kind of the decayed old cellular debris that's still hanging around. And you kind of go through and you clean that up first. And so this is a really positive benefit of fasting, is the cleaning out process on the cellular level in your vessels and in your system, which not only helps with the immune, but it also helps with cognitive functioning. This is one thing that is now not only connected to things like Alzheimer's, dementia, is an increase in these senescent cells, or these old proteins, or these old cells that haven't been removed. And as they build up and kind of clump up, it's like rust getting into the system. And so fasting can literally help clean out the rust of the body. The same way that when you do high intensity exercise, or really any exercise up to the moderate level can do this, but they've also found that when you do just 45 seconds of just all out intense exercise, it cleans the body out. So we can do this through fasting, we can do this through exercise, we can also do this through hot and cold exposure. And they find that when you're exposed to heat, like in saunas and sweats, the heat shock proteins that come about also have a similar effect to clean the body out through this process of autophagy. And now autophagy has not only been connected to better metabolic output, weight loss, along with better memory, lower incidence to Alzheimer's, obesity, and different cardiovascular problems. And so when we look at the benefits of fasting and the benefits of keeping a good, healthy gut flora and a good, healthy gut microbiome, this really has a holistic effect in not only improving the functions of the mind, the immune system, but also overall with your metabolism and weight loss in general. Now, there are certainly some cautions here, because a lot of the risks of fasting are directly related to unwanted shifts in your metabolic output. As we pointed out before, if your body is, you know, really, you know, has a very high toxic load and you start fasting, you can throw this off, or your system can start to release this faster than you can clear it out of your body. This is called a healing crisis, which can often be associated, right, with headaches, fatigue, fever, and such. So if these things come on and they start to get worse and worse and worse, you need to gradually wean yourself off of your fast. Like we said, the first couple days can be very challenging. And if you can make it through that and things start to feel better, you have more energy and clarity of the mind, then you kind of made it through the wall. But beyond that, you know, whenever you start to, you know, pull away from, you know, and decrease the amount of nutrients in the body, it's also going to affect your hormone levels. And so especially women around their cycles need to be cautious about this. You know, if obviously you're on medications or any hormone imbalances and such, it's really wise, please consult with a healthcare professional, you know, registered dietitian, a nutritionist, someone who really knows what they're doing. And then again, go slow and gradual, right? Not so fast. Because a lot of the risks and negative side effects usually come when people do too much, too soon, and too harsh on their system.
So if I'm someone who feels like I really need to work on my diet, what I'm eating, maybe it's better for me to start my fast with fasting from specific foods, trying to replace with healthier foods, than going for a no food fast right off the bat.
Exactly. Probably the best approach is just starting off in the morning, right? And just seeing, probably do the first half of the day, or, you know, listen to your body. You know, if you have a lifestyle that you really need nutrients in the morning, great. You know, have your morning meal and then try the second half of the day. And then, yeah, just maybe doing just liquids, like we said, maybe a smoothie. With good multivitamins, you know, you can combine things to have a complete amino acid sequence, to have a complete protein. You can certainly try juicing. So you can try certainly just raw foods. You know, a simple way to do this is just have lemon water for the first part of the day, then just have a big raw salad, you know, in the middle of the afternoon, and then maybe a smaller meal or no meal during dinner time. And so the body really adapts best when it has both raw foods and cooked foods. Because when you eat more raw foods, you're going to absorb more of the vitamin content from those raw foods. Versus when you cook a food, whenever you cook something, you're going to change the structure of it and you're going to absorb more of the minerals out of it. So I tried all raw for a while and it didn't really work for me. You know, it had some negative side effects, actually. And in fact, when you look at the alkaline approach, 80% alkaline forming foods is a really good, you know, benchmark to use, because I tried eating just all alkaline, thinking it was, you know, more must be better. And in fact, it wasn't. I started to get really loopy and have all these unwanted effects. And so it just didn't work out for me. And I know there's people listening that might react to this and, well, I do this and that. Well, great and wonderful. Good for you. But going all raw did not work for me. And so now I've kind of found the right balance and the right way to do it. But absolutely, when you're starting off, just start off with half a day, just focus on liquids, and then eventually going to, you know, maybe water only for several days. But for heaven's sake, your body needs something. You can't go for more than a few days without water. It's really not good for you. So getting a good clean source of water and staying well hydrated. While hydrated, and more importantly, is when should you hydrate? And it's in between meals. You know, one good thing to fast from is when you're eating a meal, try to drink very little, almost to no liquids. I mean, think about what your body's trying to do is once you, you know, eat that food, it needs to be broken down in a very acidic environment in the stomach. And so when you're consuming a lot of water and beverages, you neutralize that, you know, and so very little to no water when you're eating, let your body digest, and then in between meals. This is why I like to really hydrate first thing in the morning to flush the body out. It helps to boost the metabolism to get things going, and then gradually you can add food and meals throughout the day. And again, journal. Listen to your body, see how you respond, and gradually increase from there. But before you even begin to it, why are you doing this? You know, what's your intention? You know, is it a positive thing or is it from a negative self-image? You know, if you don't like the way you look, you know, if you feel guilty and you're condemning yourself because you think you have extra belly fat or you want to look like, you know, the models you see on the internet, which are all airbrushed and made up anyways. And this culture is kind of really in a conundrum because it's kind of surrounded itself with this image, this body type image that is impossible, near impossible to attain. And all the working out and all the dieting you can do, you're never going to look like these other individuals. And so if you're doing it for those reasons, stop, you know, and just focus on a positive, healthy intention. If you want to feel better about yourself, if you want to get to an ideal body weight, which yes, I mean, you know, obesity is definitely a thing in this culture. And when you look at the BMI, the body mass index, this can be calculated as the ratio between your height and your weight. So anyone can just go on the internet and calculate your body mass index. But why was the BMI created? It's created from insurance companies. I mean, think about that. A lot of the metrics we use for health and metabolism came from insurance companies that were trying to monetize and make a bet on how healthy someone was going to be long term. So they created this BMI index and trying to keep people within a range, and you know, would have the most predictable factor. Why? For financial reasons. And so, you know, we're now seem to be moving away from the BMI. It's a great index, it's a good measure to use, but more to the individual. So, you know, what is your target weight and why? You know, we often talk about, you know, reaching someone's, you know, finding their fitness, so to speak. You know, when people start getting into regular workout routines, along with changing their diet, you're kind of finding your fitness where your body weight will gradually decrease to a certain point where eventually you will plateau. And that is ideal. But my advice is just focus on how you feel, not so much how you look. Okay, so you can use scales, and a lot of these scales that are coming out now can measure your body composition. I mean, it's incredible. We can really use technology to give ourselves good information, and not only the amount of, you know, fat ratio, but also the amount of brown fat. The more brown fat to white fat we have, the healthier the body is. And it has to do with the metabolism, how it burns and utilizes itself. We can also look at, you know, the lean muscle ratio to fat as well as good indicators. And so take all this information in, and then when you start any change in your diet, when you start any fasting, why are you doing it, right? What's the purpose? Where's the growth? Is it from a positive set of emotions? Is it from a healthy attitude? Or is it from a negative one? Because if it's from a negative one, stop, let that go. Fasting from negative thoughts is just as important as fasting from foods. And the same thing, in summary, when we look at fasting, it's really abstaining from anything. And so if you're looking to create a healthier life and a healthier lifestyle, look at your thoughts, your words, and your actions, right? And so if you want to get better at controlling things in your life, start by controlling what you put into your body. Start by controlling the things that you think about. If your mind starts running away with stressful thoughts, well, fasting is also a stress on the body. And so fasting from not only thoughts, but people, places, scenarios that also create this negative energy around you. And I have certainly found in my own life that as I fast physically, mentally, and spiritually, there's kind of this alignment where everything comes together. And then the intuition and that knowledge from within starts to come out. And as you start to let that guide your life, you're really going to find it starts heading in the right direction. And you might have moments of setbacks, but overall, you'll know when you're on the right path. You'll know when you're heading in the right direction. And so if nothing else, use fasting as a way to clean up the body, but also to clean up the mind, to clean up the space around you, and also focus on your goals. Find your purpose. You know, why are you here? How are you going to make this world a better place? And let everything else go. Fast away from all those other distractions that are taking you off your path of your higher self. So know who you are, know why you're here, know what you're here to do, then let everything else go and abstain from it. And that's true holistic fasting. So I want to thank everyone for joining us today, and I hope you check out the other episodes of the show. Check out the website, hhcare.org, and that's where you can also find more holistic health videos, articles. You can sign up for our newsletter and schedule a treatment, either in person or a phone consultation. You can also find us on YouTube at Holistic Health Care and on social media, Dr. Jean-Paul Amante, DC, at Holistic Natural Care. So thank you very much. We are through for the present.